Welcome to another edition of the Shabbat Torah study. Tonight, Elise / Lisa will be doing the show with me. JB couldn't make it. Kirk is ill, and Yada, he couldn't make it either. He had to get something with his son ready to fly tonight. Not exactly sure, but this is who you're stuck with, okay? And I'm going to start. How are you tonight, Elise?
I'm doing well. It's a bit hot here in the jungle, but I'm doing well.
Okay, well, good. You know, there was a couple of conversations I had this week, and I really didn't know how to. I can be pretty rude to some people that if they continually claim they have it and they don't have it at all. And here's an example. I had a fellow today, 2 days ago, IM me, and his interest was in a couple of verses somewhere. And he said, and I said, well, I said, well, why don't you use this? Because he was talking about science. And, you know, I pulled up a couple of real scientific statements straight out of the Tanakh and gave them to him. He says, well, I don't like to mix religion with science. You know, I'm over here saying, say what? You know, the creator of science, the master of science. You know, I'm sharing his words and I'm showing you that he was talking about, you know, relativity before anybody even knew what the word was. He described it. And to be able to describe relativity some 3,000 years ago on a piece of paper leads me to believe we're talking about reality now and not some kind of a religious joke. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think the problem lies in his comment, mixing religion with science. It's ridiculous. The religious have no interest in science. Torah is the most scientific document I've ever found. Take the Yod, 10th letter, right? How many digits do you have? 10.
You got 10. Yeah.
It's about that simple.
Yeah, there's a lot.
People ignore it.
Yeah, there is a lot said in the Torah that we just blow right by. I'm oftentimes embarrassed when Yada will mention something like, as an example, you know, 49 and then the 50th day on land from the ark. Now, well, you know, I should have figured as much. You know, it was right there in front of my face. I've read it 100 times and blew right by it every time. But one thing's for sure, anytime we're in the Torah and Yahweh starts bringing up numbers, he's doing it for a reason. He doesn't waste his voice on a lot of, you know, nonsensical chit-chat.
Absolutely not. Every word, every yod, every little thing is in there for our benefit. And there's so much, even me, that I miss routinely. And I'll go back and look. And even the art of Gematria, it's not something that everyone's familiar with. But it's, and some people say, no, it's numerology, it's this, it's that. No, it's not. You posted a wonderful video that was done by a scientist from Hebron University. And it shows exactly how the word sun and moon and earth all have scientific value to them. And without Gematria, you can't come to that conclusion. And it's ridiculous for people to completely ignore the facts, ignore logic and reason in favor of worship and prayer and religion.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good point. That's a very good point, because that's what we're going to talk about now. Religion. Things that are good. Good according to who, I'm not sure, but probably to most people, because they've been brainwashed, you know, to that degree. I did a post. It said, what's wrong with this phrase? Hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil. And this is considered great wisdom, you know, by some people. And, you know, of course, the question is rhetorical, because just about everything's wrong with that statement. You know, all around.
Zoroastrian's philosophy, it comes straight out of Persia. And they even had a school for it in Italian Renaissance Europe, teaching this garbage. So Raphael's School of Athens in 1550, that's all they did was teach this stuff.
Okay,
frankly, it comes from even Zoroastrianism itself, Taoism, Buddhism, all of it came from India. Probably one of the biggest harlot places on the planet.
Okay, so while we see that, you know, that we hear that phrase, we've all heard it 100 times. I would just like to say that the reason that nearly everything about that statement is wrong is that when we hear evil and we look upon it, we should expose it, because evil should be confronted, exposed, and condemned everywhere. do we love the people perpetrating evil? Well, you know what I could tell most of the world, not most of the people with us tonight, but most of the world, people really do enjoy evil. In fact,
that they do.
They promote it in every country that I know of. You know, there was a king. His name was Yakizak-Yah. And what it means is that Yah strengthens, togethers, and unifies, and it's transliterated in English as Hezekiah. But it's Yakizak-Yah. And, you know, we all know the story where the Assyrians had surrounded the kingdom, and they were going to annihilate them. But, you know, this particular king chose to follow Yahweh's instructions as opposed to going out and doing what the northern kingdom had done, which was, you know, try to make pacts with people in other countries that were diametrically opposed to Yahweh. But they were also opposed to Israel's enemies at that time. So this is the concept of my enemy's enemy is my friend. You know, sort of a Sun Tzu type of war mantra, if you will. But Yahweh doesn't
absolutely
really say that. And so what I did was I started thinking about, where do people actually promote death? And I'd gotten a message from a guy that was talking to me, and he had asked me these questions, and I'd given him answers, and he had made this unbelievably foolish statement that he doesn't like mixing religion with science. He wants to keep that separate. And I said, well, I really don't promote anything religious over this way. And the person who created, the individual that created the spiritual and the physical realm, is not religious in any way. In fact, he never once, you know, throws kudos or accolades toward the religious community or those that carry the water for the religious community. In fact, he does quite the opposite. And I said, as an example, I said, let's look at Christmas. There's a religious holiday, I told the guy. And he goes, oh, yeah, I know. That's all, yeah, out of Babylon and all that. He says, yeah, I know all that. He says, but, you know, I do it, you know, for the kids. I said, now, you're telling me that you understand that this is Babylonian. You understand that this is all very real. But in order to make the kids happy, you want to advance notions that will surely kill them. As surely as if you took a gun and shot them in the head yourself. And he goes, well, you know, no, for the kids. I said, oh, okay, so for the kids, you kill the kids. I said, I ended the conversation. He was a complete idiot, and he was politically correct is what he was. And so I started looking at it, why is Christmas almost perfect? You know, in a demonic sort of way. And here's what I came up with. And you chime in anytime you like, Elise. Now I'm going to go back to the time that this king had decided to tear down all the religious symbolism in the area, get it thrown away, get it trashed, and follow Yahweh's instructions. And by the way, it took him an extra month or so to do it, and Yah was fine with that. What Yah isn't fine with is religious symbolism and sun worship and the like. He is in no way interested in inviting religious people into his home because he looks at those things the same way you or I would look at the bubonic plague. And this is how it starts. And this is over in Dabra Yom, which is concerning the days. They call it Chronicles today, which is 2 Chronicles 30:25 through 31:10. And here's what Yahweh had to say. This was after that they had had the party. Everything was fine. They had torn down all the religious symbolism in the area. They had gotten ready for Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, and they had done them. And everyone was glad and rejoiced. The entire community, Yehuda, the Lowi, priests, and everyone in the crowd who came from Yisrael, even the foreigners, who came from a region of Yisrael, who lived in Yehuda. And there was a great joy in Jerusalem. The Lowi, the priests, those are people who just officiate, stood up and evoked favor on behalf of the family, and their voice was heard, coming as a petition. To the set-apart dwelling place in the spiritual realm. This was not a prayer. It was actually just a statement. It was a petition. When they finished all of this, they went out to all of Yisrael and to the cities of Yehuda, and they found and destroyed Sabar. They shattered, knocked it to pieces, the cultic stone pillars. They cut down the Asherah vestiges and demolished the hilltop shrines and altars from all of Yehuda, Benjamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh. And when they had finished, all the children of Yisrael, each individual to his community with his own inheritance that was returned and restored to that. Now, so what we have here is we have Easter vestiges. You know, they were called Asherah.
Oh, you mean Ishtar?
Yeah, Ishtar. Yeah, and today's Easter. So now we have a world, certainly a Western world, that every Asherah day, Ishtar day, Easter day, these people get together and collectively lie to their children, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do.
And they
don't think that many people actually understand what the whole let's color the egg thing is really about. It's about, in ancient times, Asura, Ashtura, Easter, Ishtar, tribes would go around and find women, and they were sacrificed on these stones, on these marble tables or stone tables, and they were cut open from throat to belly, and the eggs were taken and dipped in their blood, and this is where, and of course the Babylon cross was on it, and this is where, this is the origins of Easter, Ishtar. Pregnant women were double in value. They were more sacred. The eggs were then taken and hidden around, and whoever found the egg got it a gold coin from the king. How much more disgusting could it be? And this
I was just going to say, so this is the kind of thing you would definitely want your children to be in on, right?
Yeah, it's about as fantastic as halal meat.
Right. So, one thing's for sure, in the end here, he says, when they finished, all the children of Yisrael returned and restored each individual to his community with his own inheritance. Well, this inheritance happens to be the covenant, which is everlasting. It makes them immortal. And so, as we go down here, we see that disassociating oneself from religious shrines and objects is as pleasing to Yahweh as answering the call to Passover itself. These Yehudim were clearly on their way home. Now, there's a special significance to destroying everything associated with worship of Ashura. She represented Easter, the pagan counterfeit of Passover, unleavened bread and first fruits. While Ashura was conceived by the Babylonians and was originally known as Semiramis, she was also worshipped by the Assyrians. And those were the very people that were preparing to destroy Jerusalem. And, of course, Yahweh sent out a Moloch, the Moloch of Death. He killed 180,000 of them in one night. And nobody in Yisrael had to, as much as pick up a sword. They were done. They limped home. Diseased. You know, later she was called Ishtar by the Persians. The mother goddess was the consort of Lord Baal. One of the great reasons Yahweh does not like being called Lord is it depicts him lording over people in the manner Baal did. You know, he's of course the sun god known as Satan. You know, Halal ben Shikar, the son of the arrogant rising sun, is basically just a ruse. All he did was took relationship and turned it into religion. And of course, in each of these religions, they had to have submission, and he had to lord over them, and they in fact called him Baal, or Bali, or Lord. Right?
Right.
Now, you just talked about the Easter eggs, and it's just lovely the way they dip them in blood, and it's almost perfect in a demonic sort of way. But, you know, Satan is disingenuous. He's not stupid. He wants you to have a good feeling about his counterfeits. You know, many people oftentimes, they learn Yahweh's name, they learn Yahusha, they might even learn, you know, His nature and the way he deals with this is as in the Kodesh Ruach or Ruach Kodesh in Hebrew. But it seems to me that people want to take good intentions, as long as they're well-intentioned, you know, while they're killing their children and advancing and promoting these things you just talked about, as long as they are good, you know, and they mean well, then it's okay.
It's all is good. Be good, do good, think good. Yeah.
Right. And you know, yet if you had a neighbor, and this neighbor was out, you know, mowing your grass, maybe feeding your livestock, helping you with your flowers when you weren't around, and yet, you know, every few years he'd go in and set one of his kids down in the living room, put a gun to their head, and blow their head off, would he be good?
Well, I heard Jeffrey Dahmer was a really good neighbor. They said that about him.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a good answer. Sure.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be good. He'd be who he is. He'd be a guy on his own path. And we see people that think they want to promote the concept, the very concept goodness through doing what is in complete opposition to the creator of the universe, the person who gave him life. I have to stand in opposition and say, what's good about that?
Not much.
No. Of course, what went on besides the dipping of eggs as a fertility ritual into blood was that on the day of Ishtar, or Ashura, or Easter, it was said that the sun impregnated the earth.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, lovely. It's right there with Santa Claus, isn't it? And so when the earth was... Santa. So as the earth was impregnated, of course, somebody had to be born, and that was the son of the sun. That was Tammuz.
Tammuz, yes.
And that happened 9 months after Easter, and that's today's Christmas. And it's called Yalda night in Persia.
Because, yeah, Nowruz.
Yeah, well, no, Nowruz is late.
Oh, that's the other part, yeah.
Yalda night, well, Nowruz is right near the vernal equinox, but 9 months later you still have Yalda night, which is the rebirth of the sun. So the son of the sun is being born. That's the longest night of the year, right? After that, the days start getting shorter.
Right? Yeah, and the Yule log comes from the actual burning of the flesh of those. They did other sacrifices too. So the Yule log is significant of the burning of, it's pretty gross, huh?
The burning of who? Just maybe the body of
whomever they sacrificed, because all these major days, Yalda Day, I researched a bit, and it was basically the burning of flesh of people.
Well, you know, we've all heard this quote, but you know, for people that aren't regulars on the show, I just want to point it out. Here's an interesting one. Constantine's historian Eusebius recorded the following imperial edict, 321 CC, CE, Common Era. All things whatsoever that is the duty to do on the Sabbath, these have been transferred to the Lord's Day. Then he called Sunday Sol Invictus Mithras, which is the day of the unconquerable sun. Under penalty of death, he decreed that all within his empire must cease work on Sunday to honor the sun god. Now, think about that the next time somebody says they're bringing their kids to church so they can be good. The Lord's Day is always Satan's Day. The name of the sun god, worshipped by the Phoenicians, the Babylonians, Baal means Lord. For example, the Babylonians observed Baal Barith, known as the Lord's Covenant. Halal ben Shikara, the pretend sun god, just wanted to lord over men, and possessing, you know, basically the same attitude as the Catholic clergy, they put Easter on, following after Babylon. and tying it all together, Baal was worshipped in the likeness of a bull, a golden calf with a circular sun disk between his horns at the Lord's covenant. And that leads us right back to Easter Sunday, because the day the sun crosses the equator at the vernal equinox each year, when that happens, the sun is in constellation with Taurus, the bull.
Same place Paul came from.
Now, would you expect that the average Christian that has done any study, would he look at Babylon as a good thing or as a bad thing? I mean, just the average one.
The average Christian?
Yeah.
They're clueless. They're absolutely clueless.
Babylon.
If they look at Easter, yeah, Babylon is good.
Yes, I'm not talking about their understandings. I'm talking about Babylon. I'm going to tell you right now, if you say something negative about Babylon or Babylonian precepts, the average Christian will agree with you right away.
Oh, yes, because Yahweh says, Babylon, come out of my people, and that they understand. But they seriously don't understand how to extract themselves and separate themselves from, like your guy. Well, they did it for the kids. No. Well, you're poisoning your children. That's what you're really doing. Hosea has a little nice thing to say about it. And he's the son of Bari. in the beginning of the word of Yahweh with Hosea. And Yahweh said to Hosea, go and take yourself a woman of whoring and children of whoring, for the land has utterly whored away from Yahweh. How much clearer could it get?
No, it really couldn't. I have Hani Hall on, Thomas's wife, and she's saying that that's really got what her to look for. Yah was researching Constantine and the origins of Christmas. And of course, anybody that has, wants to seriously consider Yahweh's words and what he has to say about Babylon, certainly what he has to say about Ashura, he just said that it was a beautiful thing that they went down there and they knocked all these pillars down and destroyed all these Ashura vestiges. Of course it was. Yet we have, over a billion people on the planet right now, probably closer to 2 billion, that when it comes time for Christmas, they're excited, aren't they?
They're elated.
You're down in the islands, but yeah, I remember many, many, many times just seeing basically the whole norm change out. People would be happy. They would stand together. They would feed the homeless. Now, what could be bad about that? They'd go out to orphanages, and they would, purchase toys for the children. And love was in the air. But, in Yirmayahu, which means Yahweh lives up, Jeremiah today, which means nothing at all from what I can see, he says this, indeed the world is filled with idolatrous adulterers. Therefore, surely as a part of and from the presence of this curse of the world, mourns for the dead and dries up the pastures and the encampment, becoming a barren, wither and shrivel and wasteland. And their course of action, whereby they use oppression and extortion to facilitate their wayward lifestyle, was, is, and will continue to be completely wrong, and their use of power, influence, and authority is not right, it is not honest, and it is not trustworthy. Now, he goes on to say, now we're talking about, people that are basically using other people. And, he also describes things that have actually been enjoyed and advanced and still go on today. Yahweh flat out says not to do them. The biological male designation, a circle with an arrow emanating from it, is also of Babylonian origin. It signified the sun, represented by the circle, sending a ray, represented by the arrow, out to Mother Earth, impregnating her at the festival of Ishtar, Ashura, celebrated on the Sunday nearest the vernal equinox. And true to the faith, Constantine's followers celebrate the sun's great achievement each year on Easter Sunday and 9 months later in their sun god nativity scenes of December 25th. He goes on to say here, "Hear the word of Yahweh proclaims to you, O household of Yisrael. Yahweh says, do not walk in the ways of the Goyim nations, pagans and heathens. Do not teach the signs and symbols from the sky. For the Gentiles are confused and destroyed by them. For the customs and traditions of the foreign nations are delusional. They cut down trees from the forest, the work of their own hands with an axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it down so it cannot totter. Their trees are like finely decorated cultic objects. They cannot speak. They cannot walk. They must be carried. They don't revere them. Indeed, from them, there is nothing beneficial. There is none like you, Yahweh. You are powerful. Your great personal and proper name is mighty. Who wouldn't respect you? Indeed, it is your due. For in all the wise men of the Gentile nations and all their empires, there's nothing like you. They are altogether stupid and foolish in their doctrines of teachings of their delusional idols made of decorated trees." Wow. Could it be any clearer?
Who could say it any better? No one. None. It's perfect.
Right.
And that's exactly what they do.
Yep. I shared this with a guy a couple of years ago and gave him my email, and he took it to his preacher. And the way his scumbag preacher, liar, thief, whore, came off was that, well, back then they used wood to make idols. That was his answer to what's obviously being, you know, an Ashura pole, right? Christmas tree. You know, this particular chapter was written for people in the future. That's why he was telling them not to become like these heathens. And isn't that exactly what they've done?
It is. And if you don't think Muslims do it too, at least they have the decency to call it what it is, Ashura Day. They do it as well.
Yeah.
And,
they do, yeah.
Muslims say, oh, we don't celebrate those things. But if you look in Lebanon, there's a huge tree. Huge tree in Egypt. One of the biggest things I think I've ever seen in my life. Of course they do it.
Yeah, well, definitely the people who would be listening to the guidance of the creator of the universe, that's the architect of all life, they wouldn't be doing it, would they?
No.
Right.
Not a chance.
And so, you know, one of the sad things that I see, and this is one of the reasons I did this this bit on Christmas, my kids are older, my kids do what they do, and, you know, they stay away from me during these BS religious Babylonian holidays that I don't appreciate. But there are a lot of people, the young people, you know, that are family covenant people who have children, and it seems like there is a forever war between the grandparents of their children, who are always wanting to swoop them off and take them out for the religious holiday of Christmas.
Yes. It's like stealing a child, stealing your own grandchild and administering poison.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, there's no way around it if you believe the creator of the universe. Now, you can say, well, I'm an atheist, I'm a secular humanist, I just enjoy Christmas, I like the tree, and I like giving presents, and I like everybody being nice for a couple of days. Plus, I like the time off. And you can say that. And I would say, well, you know, if you want to celebrate your own death, do it. I have no problem with that.
What you just described is exactly what my mother told me, who became, after the rabbinical split in my family, after my grandmother called a rabbi, rightfully so, a horse's patootie, half the family split into rabbinics and half became assimilated. For years, my mother wouldn't bring a Christmas tree in our house. And then she, you know, oh, it's for the kids. You know, it's to make them happy. And I remember the first time the smell of that thing in my house and the lights and everything. I really didn't understand because it was never allowed. And I thought it was very beautiful. Of course, you're a child. It's alluring. It's seductive. Everything about
that's
it
what
is
we're
very
trying to get
seductive.
To it's lovely. Really. Candlelight dinners, staying up late, nothing to do but give things to people who you like. You might even love.
Yeah, and who wouldn't go for a present, right?
Big dinners, right? Lots of fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we look at Zachariah, sometimes written Zachariahu, Zachar means remember, and then, of course, the Yahu is Yahweh, called Zachariah today. He talks about the Battle of Mogidan. And this is this great corporeal day. It's the fulfillment of Yom Kippurim. It's reconciliations. And as he's arriving, and these people are all attacking Yisrael, specifically Yeruzalem, he says this about them. He says, they're burned by the sun and blinded. Against the Most High Shepherd, against the Most High's mighty man, who is closely related to and associated with me, Yahweh, of the core helpers, prophetically declares. Now, all of us that know anything, really, about when Yahweh starts his moed, his mikra, his chag, his celebrations that run from Pesach all the way to the end to Sukkah, we know they start when? At twilight. So when he's saying they're burned by the sun and blinded, we know what he's talking about. He's talking about all the sun god images. These are the people that decide in the end that all the Yehuda need to be killed, and they are attacking Jerusalem. And they are burned by the sun and thus blinded. Satan's name is Halal ben Shakar. It means the arrogant and beguiling son of the rising sun. The adversary's most common guise throughout all human history, starting with Babylon, is the sun. And that's important because sun god worship permeates almost every important aspect of Roman Catholicism and thus Christendom by association. Constantine didn't convert from entertaining sun god worship to what is currently called today Christianity. He replaced and he convoluted Yahweh's message with the sun god religion of Mithraism. And that's what happened. It's as simple as that. Now, Yahweh says, he tells us, Yashe Yahu, which means salvation is from Yahweh. It's not from Christmas trees. It's not from religious buildings. It's certainly not from religious clerics. It's from Yahweh. He says this in Yashayah 14:15. How you have fallen from above, Halal, son of the rising sun. You are chopped off, disassociated. You are cut down, broken, and smashed to the earth, from which you weaken the Gentiles. Indeed, you will descend to Sheol, into the extreme recesses of the pit. Now, that brings us all back to the almost perfect part of Christmas. And I hope I'm not sounding boring tonight, because I just don't have a lot of strength. But, you know, it's really Yahweh's words that count, not mine anyway. So feel free to jump in anytime you want, Elise.
Well, what does the Christmas tree actually look like? Where you turn on those little twinkling little pretty lights? It's totally sun worship. There's no getting around it. That was the one thing that most Christians will find out, the first thing they'll find out that's wrong with Christianity is the Easter and the Christmas. But from there, they don't know where to go. They lack the understanding. You just go to the Torah. It's perfect. Go there.
Well, right here on the Tanakh, you just described exactly what we see every day. Or, excuse me, not every day, but we see it every Christmas season, don't we? I mean, everywhere. It's in the stores. It blankets every facet of society. I mean, you cannot get away with it. You hear this damn Christmas music, you know, from 2 months out on the TV, right? And in the stores, and anywhere you go to shop. And, of course, it's all meant to merchandise you. He told us that before. That's exactly what happens. But
yeah, they come with merchandise of you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's exactly what it is.
That's exactly right. And so they make merchandise of people. I see people go absolutely crazy, sad, because they don't have money to buy presents for their children and all kinds of things. Actually, they should be grateful. They don't know that. But we've already seen that, you know, he's talking about Halal ben Shikar's ruses, and he exactly, perfectly described the Christmas tree. And in Revelation, and this is, of course, speaking of the Whore of Babylon, Yahochanan in 18:4 penned, "Come out of her, my people," speaking of Babylon, "so that you do not participate in her sins, so you do not receive her plagues." Now, that's pretty clear. That is very clear. Don't take part in Babylonian nonsense. Now, I want to ask you, and anybody in the chat room, I mean, feel free to jump in there. When this fella told me he was, he knows all about that, and it's a bad thing, but he does it, to, you know, for the kids. What does that make this? A murderer? A child molester? What does it do?
It makes him a whore.
I mean, worse than that,
and his children's children.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it reminds me, really, you know, of what happened to Chawa and Adam.
And the Nefesh said, "You shall surely not die."
Right. Yeah. Indeed, because in the day you eat from it, you will become mortal and die. That was Yahweh's words. That was Yahweh's words, and they were very serious words. He meant them. There wasn't a lot of things that had to be done, you know, to stay in the garden. Don't eat the fruit from the tree in the center of the enclosure. I mean, how rough is that? And from that point on, you're going to have life, baby. It's going to be immortal. You're going to be in good shape. Just don't eat that fruit, okay? That's all I ask.
Wait, yeah, walk away, separate yourself. Yeah, Hosea, I love Hosea. He's so clear on this. And he says this. You know, after he says, go and take yourself a woman of whoring and children of whoring, for the land has utterly whored away from Yahweh. And then he continues and says, you know, he says, take a daughter of Gomer, of Dibalim. And she conceived and bore him a son. And Yahweh says, call his name Yisrael, for in a little while I shall revenge the bloodshed of Yisrael on the house of Yehu, and put an end to the reign of the house of Yisrael. And it shall be in that day I shall break the bow of Yisrael in the valley of Yisrael. And she conceived and bore him a daughter, and she said to him, call her Lo-Ruhamah, for no longer do I have compassion on the house of Yisrael, so as to forgive them at all. But I shall have compassion on the house of Yehuda and save them by Yahuwah, their Elohim, and not save them by the bow, or by the sword, or by battle, or horses or horsemen. And she weaned Lo-Ruhamah, and conceived and bore him a son. And then he said, call his name Lo-Ami, for you are not my people, and I'm not for you. And yet the number of the children of Yisrael shall be as the sand of the sea, which is not measured or counted. And it shall be a place where it was said to them, in the valley of Yisrael, you're not my people, that they shall be called, you are the sons of the living Elohim. He's simply saying, walk away from this tripe, this garbage, these fruits. Walk away from it. Separate yourself.
Yet most people today, wouldn't it be true? Most people today, when it comes Christmas time, feel like it's a good time of the year. Don't they?
Oh, yeah.
I actually know many people that think they are serving God when they put up a Christmas tree. Okay. As in total opposition as they are, they actually think this is the right and the nice thing to do. It beautifies the neighborhood. Everybody is so good. Isn't that true? I mean, it is true. I know I've seen it. And yet we read these words, and they're in total opposition. So I'm going to go back to this, you know, this thing of serve good, become good, look good, don't hear or speak evil. Now, this is how religions start. Yet, how can being in opposition to the creator of the universe and in opposition to the words that he shared so that a person could, you know, be well instructed to meet him and become adopted in his family, otherwise die, how could any of this be good? How could be teaching your children in opposition to Yahweh and clinging on to Babylonian concepts be good? I mean, they are damning their own children at that point.
That they are. And their children's children.
You know, because I'm like, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
because it's a known fact that children admire and look to their parents for wisdom and learning first and foremost, above teachers or anyone else. And if we're teaching them to gulp back poison, they're going to teach their children to do the same. And there it is. I mean, it goes back to what he said in Tabarim. Until the fourth and fifth generation, you know, you're going to poison your kids. It's so simple. Yet we walk past it and think it's good.
Yeah, it makes them dead. You know, and I'm going to go back to the garden here. And you know, Chawa started off like this, okay? She relied on her own words, really, to defeat Satan. She didn't rely on Yahweh's words. She relied on her words. Because what she said was, the wife and woman said to the serpent, "We can eat the fruit. We can eat the fruit from the trees in the protected garden enclosure, but from the fruit of the tree, which is relationally in the middle of the sheltered enclosure, God said, do not eat from this one. Don't even touch it, lest you die." Now, Yahweh didn't say anything about touching it, looking at it. He said not to eat it. That's all he said. But she added words in at that point. And the minute she's starting to create her own sense of decency and what was right to follow and what wasn't right to follow, her words, you know, vice Yahweh's words, she was done. God didn't say anything about touching the fruit. Only his consumption would lead to death. Chawa, with free will, and thus the capacity for creativity, fashioned a rule that Yahweh didn't delineate or make. Catholic prayers to Mary and Mass and more modern examples, but you know, these are just examples where they've decided to add on what they want. It's like taking part in Babylon. Yahweh tells you, you'll die. Yet the masses say, well, I'm pleasing the Creator and I'm not dead yet. I mean, that's how they feel about it. But the venomous reptile said to the woman and wife, "You shall not die a physical death." And that is true, up to a point. In other words, she could eat it, and it might have tasted like a pear, for all I know. And she ate it, and it tasted good, and she certainly didn't drop dead. And what Satan said was true, too. You know, he was sure he'd eat it, not die a physical death right now. That's true. You know, she was still going to experience physical death. But at the same time, all things being equal from there, she wouldn't have life. She would, in fact, die. And death is what happens when the truth is twisted and it's counterfeited. And it resembles the genuine article. It's designed to be beguiling. It's why Christmas is near perfect. It advances doing good things for poor people, making sure everybody gets something special, being with one's loved ones in a warm environment, discussing kind topics, doing good deeds that honestly make people feel good about killing the ones they love. And that's just one aspect of one religion on this planet. Just one. And
I could easily give you another addition of words. Any rabbinical Jew who's ever celebrated a Shabbat will know this. And she comes, Hashem, of course, because Yahweh forbid we ever say his name. who commanded us to light the candles of Shabbat. What an outright lie. Could it get any more disgusting? Yahweh never commanded anyone to light a candle on Shabbat. But it seems good to us. We're doing what Yahweh wants us to do, right? No. No.
Not really. It's rhetorical. Of course not. Yahweh doesn't talk about lighting candles anywhere.
No.
Even the menorah isn't a candle. That was supposed to be there through that oil.
Yeah. But simple little tweaks. Just like Chela. Oh, but he commanded us. No, he did not. You're adding. It's the same. It's the same alluring, seductive. Just a little twist here and a little twist there. Because let's face it. Halal Ben Shakar has no creativity of his own. He needs to twist what's there and just add or take away a little bit to make it seem so seductive. And it works every time. Every time. So counterfeits are quite seductive.
Right. And yet the world today, we set and is basically designed by Halal Ben Shakar. Not the planet itself, not the universe, but the commonly accepted practices are. And people embrace them as though sharing this poison with their own grandchildren is a sign of love. Now, how confused is that? Maybe it's why Yahweh said in the end, you know, they won't be able to know good from bad, or bad from good. In fact, they'll call bad good.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you get, that's kind of funny, too, because, you know, I've heard it before. And what could that mean? You know, if the majority of the people are calling bad good, what is this bad? And if you talk to Christians, well, the streets are filled with criminals and the schools are worse and there's homosexuality everywhere and there's rape on the streets and there's more murder than should be and on and on and on. And while all those things may be true, those are just symptoms of a problem. The problem is that instead of actually trying to figure out what Yahweh said, and following a pretty simple set of instructions, they decided that HaSatan's words were above Yahweh's words. And I got to tell you, this is why I don't feel sorry for a lot of them.
Yeah.
I really.
Well, kind of like back in Eden, where HaSatan's words were smooth and easy and palatable. And it's trickery. And these people really do believe that good is evil and evil is good. To not take the Yisrael to contend with Yahweh. I don't think there's a person here in the covenant today who didn't contend with Elohim at one point, said enough is enough. Just tell me your name. Please, I want to know the truth of this. I need to know the truth of this. Only then. And that's what I think real humility is. I don't have the answers. No one out here has the answers. What's your answers? Tell me your truth. I want your truth. No one else. That's when it begins. When we give up that which is lorded over us, in favor of that which is really, it's not a well-trodden path. I don't think there's a person here in the covenant today who didn't have that moment or several moments where you're just shaking your fist at the world saying, this can't be right. Tell me what's true. I just want the truth. I don't know how, I can't speak for anyone else. But I know that's how that's how I came to the truth, where I was just so fed up with running in circles in dry places that I just broke down and said, just give me your truth.
Yahweh's words are pretty straightforward. You know, once you get the words broken down, they're pretty straightforward. He has a speaking style that's pretty direct. Now, he might make the path, a puzzle that you have to have really a lot of fun, because you do have fun as you learn Torah, as you learn different paths, you know, different things on the way. I know you're really good with words. It was one of the reasons I said, they took poor Shimon over there and gave him, the name of a warehouse full of idols. Petrus. I mean, all these accidents that add up, you know, like Yahweh being called Lord and Yahusha being named after the Druid Savior at Stonehenge, Jesus. They get right down into, you know, the names of disciples and start calling them by idolatrous hills names. And these things are not accidents. They're very purposeful, which is why, just prior to describing this Christmas tree, he described these men that find it humorous and wonderful to lie to people and merchandise them. Which is what nearly all of the known world is about today. Just a giant lie. And the people that are running it are these Canaanites, which means clandestine merchants. And they're running everything right into the ground. And these are the very people that also promoted things like Easter and Christmas. And people seem to embrace death with, I don't know how to put it. They would be, it's so sweet to them. Their own death. And let's face it. Most of them do not think they're going on to heaven. You know, I watch these people on these shows where their relatives have been murdered, and they, at the end, they will say, "And I know." And it's funny; they shake their head no while they're saying it. It's really weird. Honestly, it really is. And they'll say, "And I know he's watching me right now, and I'm going to be with him." And they're shaking their head no while they're saying it. I mean, it's very odd.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, it's amazing if they really believe their own nonsense. You know, that they could oppose the creator of the universe. They could oppose his words. They could even not take the time to ever even look at his words, so they wouldn't even know if it's true or not. Let's face it, when you walk into a religious atmosphere, you've got somebody telling you something. He never proves any of it. He just says it. Right?
So it's kind of like your guy in the science and religion thing. You could prove it to him all day long. He won't look at it because he won't mix.
Yeah. You know, I had a guy walk up to me. It was, a few months back anyway. And he came up to me and he said, "Look, I'm stuck at this store. I ran out of gas." He says, "Could you help me, you know, just maybe get enough gas to get home?" I said, "Well, where do you live?" And he was talking about, you know, 20 miles down the road or something. And I said, "Sure." Handed him $10. I said, "Have a good one." You know, got my car. And before I could, I opened the car door. And before I could sit down, I knew I'd been had. Do you know why I knew I'd been had?
How?
He said, "God bless you." I said, "A scumbag thief." You know, I knew it right then. I thought, why did I? I just looked at him and shook my head, shut my door, and drove off. He was a professional liar. You know?
You mean like Joel Osteen?
Yeah, like that. On a smaller scale. He was a failed Joe Olstein, even though I doubt that you could fail any harder than Joe Olstein has failed. when he sees a an ark being built, as Yahweh telling us we should all own a yacht. Never, I don't know why, I never got that out of the story of the flood or Noah.
Somebody's
been on hold here. I just put them on. 276 area code, are you with us? Nope, they hung up. Not sure what happened there. But yeah, I really felt the need to share this. And the reason is, even though I know I'm not under some kind of pressure, to introduce my kids to Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the rest of it. Oddly enough, there are people that are practically threatened, by their parents or in-laws to try to kill their grandchildren. It's just an amazing thing. And it's the reason that I put that note together. And it's a rather lengthy note, and probably not a lot of people will read it. But anybody who was really looking for what's so perfect about Christmas, they would find that it's an abomination by the time they finish reading the note. And it's like the rest of the world. It's one of the things that people are confused about. People are confused because they think God's omnipresent, right? I mean, that's pretty confusing.
Yeah.
And he's everywhere, and he puts all these people in power that are basically, working to diminish you financially or any other way they can. Apparently, they really, get off on this. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. And you put that stuff out there, and people who think Yahweh is omnipresent, he's controlling all this. Man, this is nothing more than choice. Poor choice. But it's poor choice by mankind. Yahweh doesn't have anything to do with inventing Christmas. He didn't do it.
No.
But he gave people that really don't have the ability to reason very well their own opportunity to do whatever they wanted. And that choice, that group of choices, is going to move straight down toward the final battle of Mogi Down. And I can tell you, this I do know for a fact, most people today aren't going to make it.
That is true.
Oh, yeah. And even if you did make it, let's say you made it, I mean, that would be good. But going through that 7-year period of time wouldn't be so funny, would it?
No. No. From what I read in Hebrew, it's going to be He says, I'm going to make man as rare as the gold of Ophir. It took me 3 months to figure out where this place Ophir was.
Okay,
because the mines are empty.
Okay, and like this, where is it?
Saudi Arabia.
Okay, well, break it down. What?
Close to Yemen. More close to Yemen.
Okay.
Actually, and there is no gold left there. Very little, I'm assuming. Because there are people at the end where Yahweh says, they are redeemed and washed clean. However, when's the last time you heard of any gold coming out of Yemen? Not much comes out of Yemen. Yemen imports everything that they have because there's nothing there.
That's just a dried up wasteland. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad news coming down the pike, and all of it's got to do with people thinking that they are good. What they're doing is good. Let's just say that some guy had come along and built you the finest mansion and provided you with the finest gardens full of the finest fruits and the finest meat was out on a pasture that you had full access to. And he asked you. He said, look what I've done here. He says, you know, and it's no problem that I've done this. But I'm going to ask you one thing. You see that fountain out there in the back, that pure water I've got coming up, welling out of a spring? Do me a favor and never swim in that water. And you decided to walk out of your nest and go down there and swim in there because, after all, he's gone. He's not going to know.
Yeah, who's to tell?
Right. This was a pretty bad choice to make. Whether he catches you or not, it's stupid. And, of course, if he is the Almighty, he catches you. And, you know, this is really the position people are in today. It's hard for them to imagine that the choices of the people they thought were wise, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, so on and so forth, made good choices. Well, the truth is, most people make choices that will kill them every day. Now would be one thing.
I have a funny one for you, Larry. I don't know who posted this today. Someone did. But it's going to fall right in line with what you're talking about. A farmer, he's got a beautiful farm and a nice lake. So these girls decide to go skinny dipping in his lake. So he comes down and he's got a bucket and he's picking fruit. And the girls are like, oh, we're not getting out until you leave. And he's like, I'm not here to see you. I'm here to feed the alligators.
That's about right, isn't it? I mean, that's where we're at. And since Yahweh is not omnipresent, and since Yahweh is not interested in everybody, and since Yahweh gives people the opportunity to engage him, and most will choose in their entire life to never engage him. I already know. You can show them undisputable facts, and it goes right over their head, and they do not care. But I'll tell you, there's going to come a time, a day, that I'll bet they do care. And at that time,
you know when that day will come?
It's going to be too late.
Yeah. That day only comes when there's so much pain, especially, I'm sorry, but Yahudim, I love my tribe, but my goodness, are we the most messed up family ever, you know? I can't even listen to a rabbi without wanting to rip his curls out. I can't anymore because I know, and I know the truth. You know, this do good, be good, think good thing that came out of Babylon. Well, we brought it back with us in rabbinics, most assuredly. I'll tell you how I know. Because when Ezra took a priest from Babylon, you know, they were getting the tribes back and, you know, building the second temple. And this is where it really began, the do good, be good, think good thing. It really started about the second temple period. You know what he called the priest? Zerubbabel. Zera, seed of Babel. Confusion.
Lovely.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. I do think that is the mystery of Babylon. I really believe it. I think so because it doesn't matter what religion they're in. You know, whether it's the Amish or whether it's, you know, the people involved in Buddhism or Hinduism or the people involved in Christianity. All these people are busy forgiving everyone and doing everything good. You know, like there's some big, one thing about it, there's a point about really not being judgmental and forgiving nearly everything. Like somehow this makes you a greater spirit, or it's going to give you great spiritual power somehow, I guess in the next life. And of course, it's completely nonsense. I mean, why would you, let's just say as an example, let's say your dogs are out in the front yard and some complete jerk comes up, he's got a gun, and he guns your dogs down, kills them, and laughs about it. Now, tell me, what's to forgive about that?
Not a whole lot.
And where did Gal
I'll tell you, even my dogs, you touch them. But I have a, here in the Caribbean, they're not very kind to animals at all. And they're very cruel. And one of my goats, whom I named Azazel because he just had this horrible markings on his face. And he was quite a little pervert goat. So I called him appropriate names. But this person that helps farm the land here with me, I only have one guy. He's so corrupt in his thinking, absolutely corrupt, that he actually killed my goat. And he couldn't understand why I was so upset. He couldn't understand it. And I said, because that's a living, breathing thing. And because of your negligence and stupidity, you killed him. And he's just like, oh, we'll just bury it.
Didn't mean that much to him. Sure shouldn't have meant that much to you, huh? We've got a caller that called in on 276-608-7000. Are you there?
Yeah, I was just listening in, Larry.
Oh, okay. Well, how's the road treating you tonight, Tom?
Not too bad. Actually, I'm headed towards the house. I'll be home for one night tomorrow night, even though I just got back on the road from being out for a week. So every now and then it works out where I can get back by the house.
such is life on the road. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm going to do, I guess, I mean, have you got anything you'd like to add? I mean, I'd like to hear.
You're actually a person that has
young children, that are, this is the kind of thing that would affect you. Grandparents being good, teaching grandchildren how to kill themselves. You have the floor. Go ahead, Tommy.
Well, just the last few minutes from what I caught about, all these religions, the main thing that they try to teach people to do is to forgive and to love everyone, and that's all part of the New World Order, plan. It's indoctrinated from curriculums in school. Give you an example. The title of a history book is not American History, Here are the Facts, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's the Great American History, so it's presumed that by the time you finish with this history book, it's the Great American History. It's not the truth about what really happened. And the same thing with the religion stuff. It's tolerance. I really don't know how to sum it up, but it's pretty sick.
Well, it's a lot of Babylonian precepts, and it's based on, inclusiveness and loving everyone. Well, I don't love everyone, not even close. I mean, there's very few people that I can honestly say I love. I mean, right?
Right.
Like the people attacking people that can clearly prove what they're sharing with their children is true and just and thus right. You got the grandkids of these parents wanting to rip them out of these children's hands and teach them how to be suicidal. I mean, how good could a person be? Right?
And you would think that a grandparent, because, wow, grandparents love their grandchildren. They really do. That's a loving thing to do. Would, if your grandchild is underneath the sink trying to spray insecticide in their mouth, would be to slap it out of their hands. to separate them from that poison. Yet they cannot make the connection between Christmas and Easter.
Yeah. These, you know, what kills me is these very same people often are wanting to run them off to churches. Now, when you can share Yahweh's words and you can show that they're in direct opposition to running off to these religious institutions, and, you know, you would think somebody who claims to at least be trying to, you know, do what's right in the eyes of the Creator, you'd think they'd go, wait a minute, I've been wrong.
Well, the thing is, they don't take Yahweh's word as point of fact. They try to assimilate it into this, that same thing we were just talking about, that worldview of God saving the whole world. And when you try to tell them the truth,
he never
says
that.
Well, I know he doesn't say that, but that's what's been indoctrinated into their mind, and they can't filter the truth through that because that makes God mean or unaccepting. And he's not mean and unaccepting. He's just not tolerant of things that are going to corrupt his family.
Right.
And all you got to do is be willing to walk the path to him, and he'll show you why it's wrong. See, I know when I first walked away, I didn't know why everything was wrong. I just knew it was wrong and it was untrue. And the more I walked to him, the more I think I was like, oh, that's why. Because it hides the past. And it keeps people from him. And you don't see that initially.
Right.
And you're walking out of the
line. Burning question for Christians, because I've never been a Christian. I just never happened for me. What is this?
We can applaud
love
you for that.
The sinner. Yeah, no, not really. I had other whoredoms. I went in a totally different direction. It's just the same in Yahweh's eyes.
Sure.
But I have a burning question. What is this thing? And I could never stand when Christians said it. I just wanted to sock them in the mouth. Love the sinner but hate the sin. What is that? Where is that? Because I've looked all over the Torah and I can't find it. Where does that come from?
Probably some
fabrication
from a pastor. Well, probably from a scribe. I mean, I really think that a lot of the, you know, judge not lest you be judged, and if you know you throw the first stone and this and that. I think a lot of that has to come with, you know, the blatant hypocrisy that comes from the elite clerical class, you know, the people that actually, you know, oversee what the scribes write, hire the right scribes to write in what they want, because they know what they're doing is deadly. They know it. They don't believe
what any scribe has ever put in that New Testament thing, whatever. It cannot overpower or take from what Yahweh said in the Torah. It's impossible. If the two don't match, then you got to throw one of them out.
Well, yeah, of course. I'm with you. You know, I'm with that. You know, Yahweh tells us not even really to spend a lot of time in their words. He said, "Don't consume their words." That's the wild boar. You know, that's the whole point of it. Don't read their material and don't consume their words. And of course, I don't. But at the same time, when I see people, you know, I had a woman yesterday. I was in a debate, and she goes, "You don't know what I believe." And I said, "Well, I do know this. You oppose Yahweh's words, thus I don't care what you believe. Why would I care what you believed? What does that have to do with anything? Matter of fact, what are my opinions worth?" I asked her that. I said, "I'm showing you Yahweh's words." She went away. You know, she had opinions.
Oh, yeah.
Now, her opinion was that you were saved by grace. And I showed her this was an absolute impossibility. The gratia aren't even real.
The whoredoms of grace.
Yeah, my son-in-law made a post yesterday on my wall about if Noah was saved by grace, then why did he build this big-ass ark?
Yeah, what was the point of that? Why follow Noah's instructions when you've got grace? That's exactly right. We've got a caller that called in from 254. Would you like to chime
That's
in?
That's me, Lair. Robin.
Okay, Robin, chime in.
Well, I'm thinking that double-sided love, the sin and not the sinner, or the other way around, or whatever. That's straight Pauline. The Torah causes me to sin.
Oh, was that Paul?
She's so right.
Yeah, yeah,
oh, my goodness. Now it's clicking.
Yes.
Bravo, Robin.
Well, it's just good to hear your voice.
Yeah, because that's not in Torah.
No.
Yeah. Dode really had a way of putting that down. He said those with divided loyalties, I hate them. You know, I hate them.
Thank you.
Pretty out front. We've got somebody else that called in on 111. I mean, basically, they're not giving me the number. Are you with us there?
Hello?
Yeah. Please. Yes,
hi,
I can.
I have a question for your guest. I didn't catch her name. I'm sorry.
Elise.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Nice,
Elise.
Nice to speak with you. And you. Can you recommend a Torah in Hebrew without the vowel pointing? Is there such a thing?
No.
There is not.
What I can recommend to you is this. Go to the oldest manuscripts available, and those would be the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay.
For... I started off on the Masoretic until I learned how many takeaways and lies and absolute tripe and garbage was in there. Many things that have been changed. Many. Basically, pretty much whenever they're talking about Messiah, you can just throw it out the window because the scribes have brutalized and just tore it to pieces. The BFS is the best chance we have at knowing anything.
I have the English and
but they all come with translations.
What's that?
I have a
copy of the Dead Sea Scroll Bible, but it's all in English. There isn't any Hebrew writing in it,
that's
per se, so maybe
I'd
offer the right form.
Right.
Yeah, that would be a sad deal, because I've seen people say they're doing a word-for-word interpolation, and they're calling Yahweh a Lord. And this is out of the Dead Sea Scroll.
And every one of them I've bought.
Yeah, I've been trying to do my own translation. I have an interlinear, and I'm finding multiple mistakes. So, and I took a biblical Hebrew class recently, or started to, and you're absolutely right. There's just, I mean, they obscure, they remove Yahweh's name.
Yeah, and they claim that it's in line with the Bible.
Exactly, exactly.
Christians will claim that the DSS is just like the Bible, and I got bad news for them. First of all, there's no worship, there's no prayer, there's no praise associated with Yahweh anywhere in His Torah. They are associated with Baal, though.
Yes.
You know.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can get a copy for around $10,000 that hasn't been translated.
I've seen them
go for much more than that. They'll send you a family copy of the Dead Sea Scrolls if you got an extra, say, $62,000 laying around.
Yes, sure.
So is there a copy of the Dead Sea Scroll Bible that's still in Hebrew? There is such a thing, you're saying?
Well, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls, some of them are online.
Yeah.
I know that if you... I'm sorry, this Logos software... That there's Hebrew packages in there that have the Dead Sea Scrolls, and that's pretty your best bet. But always with the Masoretic, what I do is double check it against the DSS, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and the Septuagint wherever anything applies to Maaseiah, because it's so convoluted.
It's like
water has been
becomes lions at my feet kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah.
Dribble,
they call
that.
So pretty much I've learned as a Jew, whenever it is anything concerning Yahusha, don't trust the Masoretic at all. Go to the Septuagint, go to the DSS, go anywhere else, but don't go to the Masoretic for that.
You know, one of the big mistakes, too, translators make is that they will go to the most recent the most recent mistake and carry that forward from there instead of going to the base root of the word and figuring out how Yahweh used that the first time he ever used it. And, you know, that's
go to the root of the word.
Accuracy. Yeah, you know, I know that. And it makes sense. Now, we have another caller on 337. Who is it?
Hi.
Okay, well, speak up there.
I was just going to point out with the traditions and Christmas and Easter and what you were talking about, the DSS and the Bible and translations, it pretty much goes back to the clerics. That's why Yahusha called them vipers. Because with them changing the words and stuff like that, it kind of whitewashes, and they blend Christianity, Judaism. That's how it all got mixed up in the first place. And then they kind of cover over the festival days, which in turn all these people don't know that doesn't know Hebrew. They kind of, you know, get misled. But then, you know, the children, they sacrifice their children by going to church and following the Christmas and Easter traditions. Which is kind of dumb. So, I mean, it's kind of like secular reasoning with Pauline Christianity. You see, it's one big circle. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, he says, you know, you'll walk in dry places. And it's so true. It couldn't be any more true.
Right.
They just follow after Baalim.
Right. And then when Yahweh was speaking to Abraham to walk out, I mean, it kind of rings clear there. Walk away from man-made traditions. Walk away from Babylon. And it's like he's constantly saying that through the Torah. And these are the reasons.
Absolutely.
And then you also, you're walking towards something that makes sense.
Right.
And once you separate the Torah from the Quran and you separate the Torah from the New Testament and Christianity and Judaism, and you understand that these set-apart feasts are not just parties. They are parties, but they're a path that Yahusha walked. He was walking from this realm back into the heavenly realm. And he's saying, you know, you can trust this path, and I'm going to show you. I'll walk it and show you this works. And then you got all, like Larry was saying earlier, you got these pastors talking, but they won't show you anything. They want you to plant a seed of faith or give all your whole paycheck or what, you know, whatever. Just do something crazy to prove that you love God. But what are they doing? Where's the risk they're taking?
That's where the relationship comes over religion. See? Prefer relationship over religion. But in order to do that, you got to walk away from Babylon. Why those five terms and conditions comes first.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It was a good show. I think we're off the air, aren't we?
Yeah, we are off the air, but still, you know, they can hear it in the archive. I can tell you this. Is one of the things that's always thrown me about people, and this is something that's never going to go away. I mean, it's just going to be what it is. People will claim one thing and do something entirely different. I mean, there's no way that I could show you about a Christmas tree and you say, well, I serve God. You know, this is pretty typical. You know, my house is a house of the Lord. Well, yeah, it is. Sadly, you don't know what that means. I mean, they actually proclaim what's true in some cases by accident like that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when they say they care about what the creator of the universe says and then they go out and they do all these other things that are clearly in complete opposition. I mean, I don't think that note could have been any clearer. I mean, it's just complete opposition. There's just no way around it. Those are Yahweh's words. They're not mine. It doesn't matter what I even think. If a person could read that note and they wanted to please now the creator of the universe, they would never bring a Christmas tree in their home. They would never advance religious platforms like that again. certainly not Babylonian ones. But it is a constant with these people. And I don't know, I mean, bottom line, in the end, like Yana says, I think they are all agnostic. I don't even believe they believe there's a creator. I think they think all this fell out of the sky by accident somehow, which is more insane than even religion, most religions. I mean, it's pretty bad, right? I mean,
and that goes double for Jews. They think the same thing.
Well, Jews think that
they don't
it's their
the
Torah.
Word.
Well, they think it's their Torah.
Oh, yeah.
And in a manner of speaking, it is. Because Yahweh called their Talmud their Torah. Now, he said it
right
to death. And, you know, it was a bunch of nonsense, but he called it their teaching and instruction, which is what
yeah,
Torah means.
Their own.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, do the Jews have a Torah sure, that they wrote? Yeah, it's called the Talmud. In opposition to Yahweh.
And most people have no inkling how rabbis deceive the house of Yehuda in this way. Is that when you go to yeshiva, when you're a young child, and you're usually a boy, goes to yeshiva school where they teach you Talmud. But they think you're sitting around learning Torah. No. They spend 10 hours a day learning Talmud. Have you ever seen the set of books for Talmud? They're endless.
Yes, a ton.
They're endless. You put your right shoe on, then you put your left shoe on, then you tie your right shoe, and then your left shoe. What is all this? It's anthropomorphism.
It's the same in everybody in our society in America. The way I come up, I never had time to study like I did when I was studying Yah's word. And when I came to find who he really was, if you're studying Talmud for 10 hours a day, how much energy mentally are you going to have at the end of the day to actually go home and spend time in Yah's word and see what it says for yourself? You're going to be mentally exhausted.
All right. You can't
so you're caught in the
wind. You can't contemplate and think. It's a concept that started in Babylon. It's called anthropomorphism. And what it is the same thing as what's today's word, synchronicity. Changing one thing and melding it into another. Kind of like, you know, a snake that sheds its skin or a snake that eats another snake.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same. It is exactly the same. And this do good, be good, think good is so permeated in the Jewish psyche because that's all they teach throughout the Talmud. You know, the goyim and don't go near them. They're death, they're this, they're that. I have news for you. There's many goyim that I know so much more than any rabbi has ever announced or told to me. Throughout my life, throughout my grandmother was smart. She straight up said, "You're a horse's patootie. You want to sell me a lulav for $150 US? Are you insane? Get out of here." And
right.
You know what happens to a Jew when they go against a rabbi? Let me tell you what happens. Your family is cut off. Your livelihood is cut off. Because Jews stick together. We've had to survive.
Mm.
So the Jewish baker goes to the Jewish gas station, goes to the Jewish attorney, and it's just like that. Because the Christian world pushed us into that position. But what it's really done is created a fishbowl effect. And the rabbis have seized power in such a way that you cannot breathe, move. You know, they even tell you how to wipe yourself? No kidding. That's in the Talmud.
How to what?
How you are to wipe yourself.
Oh, wow.
Can't you?
Yes.
Wow.
It's in there. It's not just a Muslim invention, honey. It's in the Talmud. And the insane thing about it is that like little soldiers, we listen to them. Yahweh didn't do enough calling them vipers and adders. It wasn't enough.
Not in my opinion. When I see rabbis with their mourning clothes swaying back and forth and the little curls swinging about, and to me, all I want to, you know, those mourning clothes, what, for the temple? Because you put out your own failed Messiah? Bar Kova? The whole, people don't even understand what the word Masada means. It's a joke. How people cannot even look into their own history. Abba is, you know, Yahudim, our own history. It's disgusting. It's utter filth.
What does Masada mean?
It's filth.
What does it mean?
Hold on. It's just, for some reason, just escaped me. I think Masada means to a stand. It's like, hold on.
Take a stand. I think
yeah.
You're right there.
Oh, they took a stand, all right. They took their stand was against the Auschwitz, period. And that's what happened. That is exactly what happened.
Well, here we are.
It means fortress. It's a fortress. That's what it means. See, like a stand, the fortress. Who is the goddess of fortresses? Amun Atwar. And what happened? They were at war with the Romans. But they were at war with Yahweh long before that. And the Bar Kokhba revolt had nothing to do with anything other than their denial, their utter hatred for Yahusha.
Hmm.
When they say they hated him without a cause, read Rabbi Akiva's Messiah, and you'll know how much they really hated him. They hated him with all that they had. And funny enough, Hillel, yes, the school of Hillel. Yeah. When the Romans permitted him to go back to the land, obviously he made some kind of deal, because Romans are brutes by nature. They don't give anything, just like they didn't give Paul citizenship. He did something for that.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
How
come Paul didn't suffer like the rest of the guys who walked with Yahusha? How come he got a free ticket?
Well, suppose they had some story out there that he died in prison. Well, I don't see any evidence.
Well, he didn't get sawn in two or fed the lions or anything.
Yeah.
Paul never walked.
To this day, they have a monstrous statue for Paul. The first place he went to, which was Cyprus. I lived in Cyprus for 7 years. You can go look at his ugly mug in Paphos. It's so rare. He did something for them. Because nobody gets anything free from a Roman. But Hillel, a rabbi, Ra'ab, the exalted one, started a school. Well, he had a school. Within a few years, 22,000 of his students died of the plague. If that isn't clear in your face, 22 is a fantastic number. 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. How could anyone ignore this? Especially Yahweh, especially the Jew. I'm stumped with it. I don't know. It makes me weep for them. And Yahweh's words, if you do what I'm shamar, if you listen to me, if you do what I am instructing you, if you understand it, if you yada, no enemy shall rise against you. Where was the worst place most Jews have died? Yahud, the Shoah, what we call the burning, the Holocaust. You want to know what happened there? In places like Lviv, Poland, and Warsaw, and other places, Vilna, was what they were doing was codifying that Talmud. They were doing what Constantine had done a long time ago. But still today,
you have Palestinians, which are Arabs, and a few Jews in there too. Let me tell you, who are fighting their own people in their own country, who are allowed to rise against them, everyone around them, a billion Muslims surround them, and they think that they are the right in that part of the world. How is it they can be a light if they don't say Yahweh's name, if they don't care, they don't shamar, they don't yada, they don't understand. They'll Hashem you to death and Adonai you to death, and Adonai is the Lord of, he means Lord.
Adonis.
And yet,
they
tell themselves that Yahweh is with us, Hashem is with us. How can he be with you if an enemy is allowed to rise against you? It's impossible. You point this out to any Yahud, and they will spit in your face. Trust me, I've done it.
Well, the irony, like what you when you mentioned the Shoah, one of the big ironies to me is there's tons of them in the Torah. Is that if you translated with the Masoretic system, it would be called Shiva, the Shiva system. And the very vowel pointing system, the very changing of God's word, the very changing of Yahweh's word, is what put us in this predicament. And this is why millions of people have died. This is why billions of people are led astray right now. And that's why he is so harsh about towards people who change his message and change his name and change his ways. But that word Shiva,
let me tell you who Shiva is, because I told you I was never a Christian. I was a different kind of whoredom. I learned for 11 years. I sat on ashram floors in India, and I learned the Vedic texts. I can still to this day speak Sanskrit, okay, one of the oldest languages around. Ayurveda, all that stuff. Shiva means destroyer. Shiva, Allah, it's all the same. Adonai, it's all Lord, it's all Baalim. It's all the same. And so they'll say Adonai, Adonai, Adonai. It's Shiva. That's what Shem Baal Tov? Please. Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's Shoah.
You might as well
no
just think I'm just going to rip up your word and use it for toilet paper. Thank you very much. Because that's what they
yeah.
do.
Well, you know, I mean, we all know in this group, certainly, that the last person you go to find out how to meet Yahweh is HaSatan. You know, we know that. We certainly know that. The sad part, what I was trying to kind of infuse in tonight was, and I don't know if it came across real well, I hope it did, is that the replacement for Yahweh's words is being good. And I guess being good means, that's pretty subjective, isn't it? I mean,
yes,
my grandmother was a good person.
I mean, let's say you're with ISIS. You know, let's say
she did a lot of things.
You know, you come home and they told you did a good job and you're a good man, you probably murdered a lot of people. Maybe raped their dead body. You know what I'm saying? I mean, being good is a term that it's subjective. It's all kinds of subjective. And by the way, it's the same thing with Christmas and Easter and
Karen's Day,
4th of July. I mean, really, it is. You know, militarism, religion. You know, especially sun god worship. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying it's a carrot and stick approach, man. That's the only thing Satan can use. He can't raise his children to make good choices. He has to pressure them into making the right choice.
But yeah, his choice. And that's what That's why, you know, I mean, you'll hear people. I've actually seen Christian conversations on FB where they point, you know, in the end, the people will think good is bad and bad is good. And I've jumped in on a couple and said, what do you think they're talking about there? Nobody thinks of going out. Even the rapist that does it doesn't think going out and pulling some person out of their house and raping and killing them is good. I mean, he doesn't think it's good because he tries to hide it. You know, I mean, he knows it's not good.
Well, they don't even follow their Jesus.
What's that?
I said they don't even follow their Jesus or their Paul.
You know, I know they don't. But, well, I think they follow Paul to a certain degree, but they don't really, because he was the guy that said to be constantly in prayer, even though the word prayer is never used in the Torah. You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, one of the happiest moments of my life was realizing that the creator of the universe is not a religious deity and doesn't want to be worshipped. He wants to be welcomed as an individual. Same way I would welcome Tommy into my home today, same way. Now, I would probably be a little bit more in awe, I will admit. Tommy would be right in there, man. You know, I'm impressed.
Really the rabbis who taught everybody fear, fear, fear. It's them. I put it squarely on their head.
Why not? I mean, you can certainly do that. But the point is that, you know, when people run around and they say people are good, they're really not thinking about what they're saying. Would I prefer
why do you call me good? Why do you call me good? Yosha said that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
There is
why
one who is
good.
And why would I want to be around? I don't want to be around people that are carjacking and, you know, stealing cars and, you know, trash in a neighborhood in general. I don't want to be around that. They're clearly not good. And I think most people would admit, no, they're not good. But when you start talking about their Christmas, that's good. Right?
Right.
Absolutely.
So they can't tell good from bad. They can't. They flat out can't. They cannot. No way. You put it in front of them in the Creator's own words, and it doesn't matter.
Nope.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any of that BS with your parents or your in-laws, Tommy, where they're
afraid? Oh, my
goodness.
I'm going through it again right now because my daughter's getting married. And
they need a church wedding, I'm guessing.
No. Well, the son-in-law, he's an avid truth seeker. He's not there yet, but he's definitely getting there. And and it's not because of y'all his words. It's because Tommy's brainwashing him.
Tommy, so you got a setup over there, huh, where you put him in the cage, shine a light in their eyes, put them under strobe lights, and feed them.
That boy's going to do his own thing no matter what. You know, he doesn't
like anything. Yeah, they call it the Driggers cult yet.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely the cult. The whole family, the whole...
You're all
in
cult?
They're all praying against us, and, you know, they want to...
Who's giving you all this money and stuff? I mean, what are you getting out of running this cult?
a lot of grief.
They're in reality, folks. You know, religious people are insane. They're insane. And, you know, there's a term in psychology they call projection. You know, and that's what you got. I mean, it's projection. What do they care what their son believes? Are they religious people?
Very religious.
Oh, that's why they care. I see.
Yeah. Which one? Which flavor?
Excuse me.
Messianic
Judaism.
Oh, no. So instead of having no religion, they have adopted two religions.
They got Jesus and Yeshua.
Okay.
No Yahweh. No Yahweh at all.
One foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel.
Pretty much.
Messianics are about as confused as they get. They're always writing nice things. That you should be nice.
Oh, yeah.
And so forth, you know. And, of course, I don't know what being nice has to do with it. Dode wasn't exactly nice to the people that opposed Yahweh's words. I mean, not even a little bit.
None of the prophets were.
Well, of course they weren't. They were killed by these people. They were killed by religious people.
And when I show them Yahweh's words and the prophet's words, they're like, are you going to put yourself on a pedestal with them? Because you're not a prophet. And I'm like,
why do you think that Yahweh had the prophet write these words down? Think about it. And get back to me in a couple of days. Yeah. You're not a prophet. Who said... You're sharing the prophet's words with them, and they're telling you you're not a prophet. You say, well, you know, I didn't say Tommy said. You know.
Exactly.
Well, it's after hours here. We're coming around 9:30 now, so I'm going to hang up, but it's been a pleasure, you know.
Before you hang up, I would suggest we need an after hours group.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, we can sign one up, but, buddy, I tell you, by the time I'm done with my week and I get into Shabbat, I just can't wait to take a bit of a breather here at this point.
I
could do that. Don't get me wrong. We could do it. So I know I've got the home.
I swear I'm going to move in with the Triggers. The Triggers, they pause. They look like they have so much fun.
Oh, we have a blast. What else can we do to the end, right?
Well, the one thing they make everybody do when they come to their house is drink a bottle of Mountain Dew. I mean, come on.
Oh, man.
I don't think I've ever had Mountain Dew.
It'll tickle your innards. Please.
What time is it in the Caribbean there, Elise?
7:30? No, it's 9:28. We're for 6 months of the year, we're the same time as Florida and the East Coast. But for the other six months of the year, you are an hour ahead of us.
Yeah, you don't go to the daylight savings time thing or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Which is, I always found that to be disruptful. It disrupts everything.
It is. Yes, it does. And the wonderful thing I like particularly about this island is that there's small villages. There's no shopping malls. There's no real streets. There's no none of that. I don't even have a street name, but we don't have those. People ask me where I live. I'm like, up the hill and in the jungle. But the wonderful thing is that I don't have to endure like you guys do. Because you all give me what I can handle, and I just can't handle that. I don't have to listen to 3 months of Christmas music and Halloween stuff and all that other garbage. Because
that's a big plus.
I just couldn't. Yeah, oh, it's a huge plus. But, you know, on the other hand, it's a lot more work. You know, you don't have infrastructure here. There's no mail service. There's no road paving. There's none of that stuff. So, you know, you got to take out your own garbage and do your own things.
Yeah.
But to me, it's nice. And there was a man here, I think he was more of a messianic, last name Maya. It was a Yahud. And he was teaching some of the locals that Christmas is wrong, Easter is wrong. So a fair amount of them kind of get it, but they're still into their very big on their praise and their worship and all the rest.
Well, that island is dominantly Catholic, right?
Oh, no. It's Commonwealth of Dominica. It's not Dominican Republic. Republic is Eastern Catholicism. It was here, too, until Mr. Myers moved here and opened a small assembly, and it grew quite large. And he was teaching the Moed Mikra. And he was teaching Yahweh, because that's what he knew. And Yeshua. But, you know, it's a far cry from Roman Catholicism to that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they still have a long way to go. And, you know, whoever wants to listen, I'll speak with them. But many just don't care. They don't.
Yeah, it's a pretty helpful situation here in the States, too.
Hey, Tommy, I'm going to sign you up for the understatement of the Decade Award. I am not kidding. Yeah, I'm actually shocked when people say, God bless America. It's a nation he purposely picks out, defines, and says, hoy, which means whoa. You know, I mean, this is bad news going on over here, and it's obviously going to get worse. You know, one of the things that has struck me recently is that for all the terrible economic news, something like 93 million for the first time ever are out of work in the United States, okay? You know, you got Rob and Tommy driving, and I'm selling engines over here, and we're wondering what everyone else is doing, you know, because I don't know. But I'll tell you, it's getting pretty thin out there, and I think most people are aware that the economy is about to crash, give or take, whenever. But it's certainly in dire straits. And yet you've got people saying, let's elect. And now, don't get me wrong, I don't vote. I don't care who they elect. I understand it's a joke. But to go out and say, let's elect Hillary Clinton now and get, you know, Barack Obama 3.
I'll elect her. For the electric chair?
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's just, it's shocking, isn't it? I mean, it's shocking that people can be so stupid. And yet, this is supposedly one of the most educated countries in the world. I don't believe that, by the way. But, very.
And you shouldn't, and I'll tell you why. When I took my daughter, who was in kindergarten, out of kindergarten, and to Montreal, they said that she was so far behind that they needed to give her extra work. So they did. So we took her out of Montreal and moved her to Cyprus. They said, oh, no, she's 3 years behind. And we're like, what? So we had to pay all these monies for tutors and whatnot.
Yeah, no, and I don't believe it for just exactly reasons like that. But, I mean, but certainly when it comes to arrogance, America is number one. They're the most arrogant in the world, probably.
All right.
Every day.
You know, but as far as educated, not even a small hope of that. But anyway, I am out, guys. I'm going to have to hang up, and that'll cut everybody's connection. But I want to thank you all for participating. Who was 1111, by the way?
That's Jim. Jim here in Arizona. It's 623, actually. Yeah.
Jim. Oh, okay. I think it's the first time I've ever spoken with you, actually.
Yes, it is. I've never spoken with you. I've called in and talked with Yada a couple times. It's been a while, but you and I have never spoken before.
Well, I know that there's a doctor down there that's Yehud, and that he's been with the program right from the start, and I've never had an opportunity to speak to him. I have talked to him a couple of times, or listened to him a couple of times, but I'd like to get him on the show and listen to him. It'd be pretty interesting, I'm sure. But anyway, thank you.
Different perspective is always interesting, yes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I it's just this overwhelming good thing that's killing me because it's not killing me, but it's killing mostly everyone else. You know, I've even had my wife, look, my family's Muslim, and they do more good than these Christians around. Truth is, if they're talking about what they give people and do for people on a daily basis, that's absolutely true. They're not running around wanting to hack your head off. They believe they're just being good.
But in the end, what difference will it make?
None.
It's all vanity.
They'll end up right back at the soup kitchen.
Did you say it's all vanity?
Yeah.
No, that's a very, very interesting. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Depends on their perspective.
Yeah.
But it's pretty vain to say that your way is better than the Creator's way. That's bold, man. That's a start.
Thank you.
You know, that's what's out there. But anyway, thanks, you all. I appreciate Robin, honey, Tommy.
Yeah, have a good Shabbat.
All right.
Shabbat shalom, everyone, and shalom aleichem.
Shalom Aleichem.
Shalom.